There are plenty of people in life who live to deceive us. Antiochus Epiphanes IV was one of those. I'm Dr. Fred. Thanks for joining me for another episode of Study, Grow, Know as we continue looking at the prophecies of Daniel 11.
Welcome to Study, Grow, Know, where we discuss theology, prophecy, and current political issues from a conservative biblical perspective. Here's your host, Dr. Fred DeRuvo.
Well, hi, everyone. Thank you for joining me. As I mentioned at the top of this broadcast, you're listening to another episode of Study, Grow, Know. I'm Dr. Fred, and you've been listening, by the way, if you have been following us along, you've been listening to this series that we're involved in right now called Prophecies of Daniel 11, and we're focusing in solely on Daniel chapter 11 with this. This is the ninth part. You can catch all the other parts that we've done up until this point here at Sermon Audio, or you can also read them at studygrownoblog.com and just do a search for Prophecies of Daniel 11, and in the search box, and they'll all come up for you. Now, as we continue through the 11th chapter of Daniel, we find that we are on our way to discovering more about a very detestable person. Now, as I noted previously, part 8 of this series, this man turns out to be Antiochus Epiphanes IV. Now, he's not mentioned by name in the Bible, but if we take secular history and place it up against the biblical narrative, that's who this guy turns out to be in history. And that's what's so fascinating about this, because this angelic messenger mentioned to Daniel all of these things that would happen in Daniel chapter 11, which is, you know, what we've been talking about. And the reality is this: God presented this information to Daniel long before the things even happened. So no names were used, but we've also learned that we're talking about Antiochus the First, the Second, the Third. We're talking about Ptolemy the First through the Sixth. We're talking about Seleucus, Cleopatra, Laodice comes into the picture. So it's very, very interesting how all of these actual historical figures line up according to the biblical revelation. So now we're getting to the point where we're going to be featuring more and learning more about Antiochus Epiphanes the Fourth. Now, there's a great deal to this guy who winds up sending shockwaves through the Jewish community in Jerusalem. And he also ends up bringing about what historians have called the Maccabean Revolt. He was evil enough that the angelic messenger speaking to Daniel referred to this future individual as literally despicable. And that's in Daniel 11. Here we have Daniel 11, 24. Let's pick it up from that point. Quote, "In a time of tranquility, he will enter the richest parts of the realm, and he will accomplish what his fathers never did, nor his ancestors. He will distribute plunder, booty, and possessions among them, and he will devise his schemes against strongholds, but only for a time." Unquote. That's the text, Daniel 11:24. This is fascinating. God sees the beginning from the end and the end from the beginning and everything in between. There's nothing that escapes his glance, nothing that can hide from him. So this angelic messenger talking to Daniel says, look, in a time of tranquility, peace, right? He will enter the richest parts of the realm. He will accomplish what his fathers never did, nor his ancestors. He will distribute plunder, booty, and possessions among them, and he will devise his schemes against strongholds, but only for a time. Who's in charge of human history? God is. Who is in charge of the plans of men, women, kings, governors, and other leaders? God is. It's a fascinating thing. Let's break this verse down. And again, it's just one verse, Daniel 11:24. This verse is a continuation of the narrative established by the angelic messenger to Daniel. The "he" used here is referring directly back to what came before it. Now, in this case, the text has most recently been referring to a detestable person from verse 21, known in history, as I mentioned, as Antiochus Epiphanes IV. He was considered despicable due to the way he ultimately treated the Jewish people. and for what he did to the Jewish temple itself. We're going to get to that in a bit. But for the above verse, Daniel 11:24, we can also refer to the extra biblical book, 1 Maccabees chapter 3, verse 30, which shows us the type of man that Antiochus was in his heart. Though he pillaged the treasures throughout the realm over which he controlled, he didn't necessarily do it to add those treasures to his collection, solely to enrich himself. That wasn't his goal. He took those treasures because he wanted to use them as bribes or gifts to others in high and powerful positions. Here's 1 Maccabees 3:30. It says this, quote, "He feared that he might not have such funds as he had before for his expenses and for the gifts which he used to give more lavishly than preceding kings." 1 Maccabees 3:30. That almost mirrors part of Daniel 11:24. It's fascinating. So he's so concerned about having enough funds, expenses, so that he could buy these gifts, which he used, as the text says, to give more lavishly than preceding kings. So just as the Bible says, his fathers never did that, nor his other ancestors. They didn't take and distribute plunder, booty, and possessions among others. That was Antiochus Epiphanes the Fourth's goal, and he did it so he could buy favors. Most people, when they accumulate wealth, so that they can simply be wealthy. Antiochus used wealth. It was simply a tool for him. Now, most people today who chase after wealth do so because they simply want to be rich. They also understand that having wealth usually means having power, and depending upon how much wealth one can acquire, power is also designated. But this was not Antiochus's thought process. Certainly understood and appreciated the fact that wealth gives one power and influence. He understood that it is in the using of that wealth to buy favors from others, make them indebted to you. That's how real power comes into play. Wealth to Antiochus Epiphanes the Fourth was merely and simply a tool that he tried to use to gain more power and more influence. What good is having all the money in the world if your real dream is to rule the world? You need to use that money, that wealth, to accomplish the goal. And that's what Antiochus attempted to do. Now, notice Daniel 11:24 tells us point blank how Antiochus would use his plunder and wealth. Again, let's be reminded that the angelic messenger is telling Daniel what would occur in Daniel's future. So none of this had taken place yet, though it would come to that. And a lot of this did not happen while Daniel was alive. It happened after Daniel had passed from the scene. But it's interesting that God chose Daniel to reveal a lot of these things to him and ultimately to us. Now, when Antiochus Epiphanes the Fourth came on the scene, this is exactly what he did. And as it's verified in 1 Maccabees 3:30, we can see that that's true. It's also written elsewhere. Now, Antiochus was extremely crafty, and he was likely so because he was so self-centered and intelligent. Satan was able to use him in such a way as to unintentionally, this is important, Satan showed us, but he did so unintentionally, how he would use the coming Antichrist, the final man of sin or man of lawlessness that Paul speaks about in 2 Thessalonians 2. Note also that verse 24 establishes a determined length of time for Antiochus Epiphanes IV. As I mentioned before, the text says, but only for a time. God has final approval for all the schemes of men and demons. And while Antiochus was allowed a certain measure of free rein, it came to an end in God's time. Very, very simple. Here's Daniel 11:25. Quote, "He will stir up his strength and courage against the king of the south with a large army. So the king of the south will mobilize an extremely large and mighty army for war, but he will not stand, for schemes will be devised against him." Unquote. Wow, more intrigue, more sensationalism, more political butchery. One person trying to stab another in the back, politically speaking. And the King of the South has been put on notice. And, of course, we know that the King of the South represents Egypt. But here we read about him again. And the use of the pronoun he in verse 11:20, chapter 11:25, is again referring to the same man who was mentioned starting in Daniel 11:20, Antiochus Epiphanes IV. So the verse says, he will stir up his strength and courage against the King of the South. That he right there at this point in history is Antiochus Epiphanes IV. Now, because of his political assets accrued through buying of favors from others in powerful positions, Antiochus felt strong enough to attack the King of the South, who at this time was Ptolemy VI, the individual who was now in charge of the Egyptian kingdom. So Antiochus's attack against Ptolemy VI, according to history, occurred in 170 BC. That's fact. We know that that's what happened. He managed to get as close to Egypt as the Nile Delta before the Egyptians realized Antiochus was coming for a fight. That wouldn't happen in today's world. There's too much technology. But in those days, you had your lookouts, but, you know, they were not at the furthest reaches necessarily of the kingdom. And if they had been, it would have taken them several days to get back to alert everyone. Something like that with satellite imagery and everything else that we have today wouldn't happen. But notice the text says, but he will not stand. The he, we're talking about the first antecedent. So we talk in this verse, Daniel 11:25, the first he is Antiochus. He will stir up his strength and courage against the King of the South or the large army. So the King of the South will mobilize an extremely large and mighty army for war, but he will not stand. That he is referring directly back and immediately back to the King of the South. Again, the law of the first antecedent. Okay, so he is going to refer back to the King of the South. So this happened in 170 BC, and he gets stopped, or at least noticed, at the Nile Delta. So we need to be reminded here just how deceitful Antiochus Epiphanes IV was in life. So we find that he gets to the Nile Delta, and once Ptolemy realized what was happening, the text tells us in the Bible that he mobilized an extremely large and mighty army for war, but in the end he would be defeated. How? The last part of verse 25 tells us that it says schemes will be devised against him. So we're not talking about on the battlefield here. We're talking about politics. Politics pitting one person against another, getting others to come onto your side against another person. That's how things are often won when it doesn't take place directly on the battlefield. Most of the time, both things are in place. But we all know what it's like when we talk about office politics and the person who is trying to step on and over people to get to that point where they're looking to go, and they don't care who they step on. They don't care how they do it, who they turn against, who. They just want to fulfill their goals. And this is what Antiochus Epiphanes IV was like as well. He used people to his advantage. He was kind to them or warm-hearted only when he felt they could be useful to him. And his pretense that portrayed him as friendly and sincere simply cover the fact that his mission was to deceive completely. Now, this should remind us of Satan himself, of whom Paul states, quote, "No wonder, for even Satan disguises himself as an angel of light," 2 Corinthians 11:14. We know beyond doubt, because the Bible has revealed it to us, that Satan is most likely the highest evil spirit and therefore is the most, or can be the most, deceptive being that exists. The others who are under him take their cue from Satan. Their interaction into the human realm finds people whom they can use, whom they can deceive and then deceive through. Now, people who live to deceive are merely imitating Satan's character, whether they know it or not. Most of us at one time have been on the receiving end of many types of deceptive practices, and it never feels good, does it? You always feel dirty, like you've been taken advantage of, like how come you couldn't see that coming? What happened to your discernment? It's what the best con men are made of, with their ability to have absolutely no concern for others to the point that they will deceive them out of house or home. And after they've done so, they'll simply move on to the next victim with absolutely no remorse. True sociopaths. Now, in this way, while Antiochus Epiphanes IV was very good at deceiving, the Antichrist, whom Paul calls the man of lawlessness, the final guy, he will be extremely good at it. And we learn this also from Daniel 9:27, where it tells us that he will broker a covenant with the many for 1 week, but will break the covenant in the middle of that same week. This is referencing the final 7 years of human history prior to the return of Jesus as judge and king to this earth. Never before in all the world will one individual have such an ability to deceive. But we see that to some extent in Antiochus Epiphanes IV, and that's why the Bible points him out without naming him. Now, to finish up this section, before we get into verse 28, showing how Antiochus became known for his act that was referred to as the abomination that desolates, let's conclude this particular installment with verses 26 through 27 of Daniel 11. And those verses read like this, quote, "Those who eat his choice food will destroy him, and his army will overflow, but many will fall down slain. As for both kings, oh, their hearts will be intent on evil, and they will speak lies to each other at the same table. But it will not succeed, for the end is still to come at the appointed time." Unquote. I want to talk about that whole thing, but let's look at this. The first use of him is referring to Ptolemy here. It's a carryover from verse 25. So those who eat his choice food will destroy him. So his choice food, him, both refer to Ptolemy here, not Antiochus. The verse is telling us that those who actually sat down with Ptolemy and ate the great food he set before his guests will be the ones who plotted to overthrow him. Can you imagine having a great feast at your home with invited guests and you place your best food before them to enjoy? What would you think if it turned out that many of those guests, whom you treated very well, turned out to be plotting behind your back to destroy you? This is what happened here to Ptolemy. And eventually, his army was destroyed. That's what it says. And his army will overflow, but many will fall down slain. There's that word overflow, which we often think of like when water overflows a dam and leaches out or leaks out into other areas. This is a perfect example of how that word overflow is used, because it's preceded by the term army, and his army will overflow, meaning he's going to go out, he's going to do the best he can, he's going to fight, but many will die in the process. So that's what's going to happen there. Ultimately, and history tells us that Ptolemy did go out and his army was destroyed. It is likely that this occurred because Antiochus Epiphanes IV purchased favors or simply bought people outright. And we can refer back to Daniel 11:25, which we just read. Has much changed in the thousands of years that have passed since the angelic messenger first shared this knowledge with Daniel with respect to the way people work? No, not really. This is the way many people still do things. They will use people to their advantage. They will do things for people, seeming to give them favorable this, favorable that, all the while they hope to get something in return. That's what happens. Many people live like that today. Antiochus Epiphanes IV was called despicable by the angelic messenger because of what he ultimately did to the Jewish people and to the temple of God. Now notice in verse 27 above, it tells us that both of the kings, the king of the south and the king of the north, were, quote, intent on evil, and they speak lies to each other at the same table. That must have been some conversation to listen to. Here you've got two kings lying to each other because it seems apparent that neither trusted the other. What Ptolemy possibly had not realized is that Many others who sat with him at his own table, eating his own choice food, had already been turned against him. Now, I'm absolutely enthralled again with the very last phrase of verse 27, which states, "But it will not succeed, for the end is still to come at the appointed time," unquote. These two kings had their own plans, and each king wanted and expected his plans to come to fruition. Ultimately, though, it was God who determined how things would work out. The verse says and ends with, quote, "The end will come at the appointed time," unquote. Who appointed it? God. God is sovereign. He rules. Man rules only by God's choosing. But in allowing man to rule, God never abdicates his ultimate rule. We'll pick this up next time, starting with verse 28. So I hope you'll join me then. In the meantime, I thank you so much for joining me, and I pray that until we meet again, God would open your eyes to show you how blessed you are in Him.
You've been listening to Study, Grow, Know with Dr. Fred DeRuvo. Please join us each week for new broadcasts that deal with theology, prophecy, and political issues from a biblical, conservative perspective.